Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
We have a great guest for you tonight. This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. It's 1022B. That's right. You'll want to, by the way, go back and listen to 1020 A and B. There are longevity specials. And this one has something to do with that, as you'll see as well, but on a totally different basis. This is a Omid Vaisa, who's an outstanding scientist at Rice. And in fact, you can get to read about him, and I'll repeat this later if you want, Vaisa, V-E-S-I-H, lab, L-A-B, rice.edu. So it's Omid Vaisa is our guest today. He's going to speak to us. He's a really outstanding scientist in the area of, well, I'm going to let him tell you about mesenchymal stem cells, but it's really about shielded stem cells and what they produce. But we'll get into that in a few seconds. I should remind you and thank you for downloading us and tell you, just rate us, tell your friends about us. 50,000 a week of you, I hope, can't all be wrong. We are brought to you, as usual, by Persona Nutrition. If you're confused about vitamins, Persona experts cut through the hype and confusion. Imagine supplements customized to your needs. You can visit mypersona.com and take the free online assessment. You get a pack of vitamins, one for the morning, one for the evening, one maybe even a third one if that's appropriate for you, or nothing if nothing is appropriate. It's a really honest online assessment, and you get to speak to a nutritionist for free. It's another one of those great resources, like your neighborhood pharmacist, who comes with no charge and a heck of a lot of information. Dr. Vaisa is a part of a team funded earlier this year by the Department of Defense to develop an intelligent bandage that can help regrow muscle tissue in the cases of severe trauma. He also was part of his recruitment to Rice in 2006, was about technology that was used in the heart attack study to create an insulin-producing implant that might free type 1 diabetics from daily insulin injections. And he is in the Department of Bioengineering at Rice University. He's going to talk to us about shielded stem cells. So, Dr. Vaisa, thanks very much. This is obviously a topic that many in my audience are interested in, since we talk about longevity and aging and seeing what we can do to reverse it. So let's talk about the different types of stem cells, since these, you're talking about mesenchymal stem cells, different from pluripotent or induced pluripotent stem cells. How are they different?
Yes. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be on the show. My lab is interested in a broad spectrum of cell-based therapeutics, and the topic we're discussing today is some of our latest research on the use of, as you mentioned, mesenchymal stem cells. So stem cells, you probably hear a lot about in the news in various contexts. Now, mesenchymal stem cells are an adult stem cell that naturally resides in our body. They have the ability to differentiate into some various phenotypes. And in particular, we find them useful because they naturally secrete healing factors. And those healing factors is what we hope to leverage in the context of tissue regeneration, mitigating inflammation and damage, which is the study that you mentioned.
So you've gone to a whole bunch of places in one sentence or in one answer that is really fascinating. So mesenchymal stem cells are adult stem cells that can differentiate into, for example, heart tissue or differentiate into brain tissue. but they aren't what we call induced pluripotent stem cells, which are adult stem cells that you regress to be as if it was an eight-cell stem cell that could differentiate into anything. The second thing you said is they put out a bunch of healing factors, and that's one of the values of this shielded stem cell. So tell us what you mean by a shielded stem cell and what its real value is.
Right. So, you know, when we think about cell therapies, you know, the immune system is really good at identifying what cells belong in the body and which ones do not. In particular, the immune system is used to our own cells, but if we take someone else's cells and administer them, the recipient patient's immune system will immediately reject them. What we're trying to do with our research is enable the use of allogeneic cell therapies. Allogeneic means that it comes from a master cell source. So they're not matched, they're not your own stem cell. The big value of this is the ability to produce at scale, manufacture at cost, and be able to create a product which every patient could benefit from, as opposed to a very arduous process of taking someone's own cells, taking it back into the lab, reprogramming it, getting it ready to have the healing factors, and then readministering them. So what the shielding allows us to achieve.
So let me go and just to make sure our listeners got that. So there are two ways of giving you stem cells. There are probably many, but one of which is to take your own cells, take them out of your bone marrow or harvest them from fat or whatever tissue, and then take them into the lab, grow them till you've got 20 or 30 million of them, and give them back to you when they're in the right organ. That takes a lot of time and is arduous and expensive. The other way is what you said is take what you called allogeneic stem cells, that is stem cells from a master donor, one person, or maybe two or three, but one usually, and grow them in huge sheets and cultures in the lab, and then give them back. But you do something, and the problem with that, obviously, is you have to also reprogram them so they don't have immune markers on them. That is, you have to get rid of their HLA-G genes, and that's one of the things that is being done now in a lab in California under Mike West, and one thing who patented the process of doing it, and I understand also being done in Boston and being done in Japan, where they take stem cells and take away their immune markers. But you're using them in a third way that is really unique and innovative. Tell us about that third way, shielding.
Right, thank you. Yeah, so, you know, the second way you mentioned is what we hope to achieve in the future. I think, you know, in terms of being able to remove the markers, it's quite difficult and the technology is not quite ready for prime time yet. What we can do is leverage biomaterials. So we actually create a hydrogel mesh around our cells so that their soluble factors, these are the good molecules that they produce, can diffuse out. But immune cells cannot perceive these cells as foreign. So what this allows us to do is to use the allogeneic sources without having to do the reprogramming that you just described, the really pioneering work that's taking place that we hope to eventually achieve. But, you know, right now we have a practical solution, which is we could use our hydrogels to basically shield these stem cells. And then when we administer them to recipient patients, their immune system won't be able to reject these. So it allows these cells to persist long periods of time.
So what you've said and what you've implied is something I read in the literature you've written, as well as it's probably on your lab site, which, as we said, was VESIH. Yeah.
V-E-I-S-I-H.
Yeah, I misspelled it before. VEISEH lab, LAB, dot rice, omid.edu is where you can find out more about it. And in some of these articles, so what people think is the stem cells are themselves replacing other cells. What you've shown in your lab is there are two values of the stem cells. Others have shown this as well, that they also secrete substances which help healing and help decrease inflammation. And the real major advance you've made is in the shielding process by creating a material that allows the healing factors to diffuse out without the immunogenicity of being attacked by your immune system. Is that, that's how I understood it. Is that correct?
That's perfectly correct. Yes. Yes. And we think, you know, the shielding technologies, you know, the work that you're, that we're discussing today really has a great potential. And we've demonstrated utility in the area of heart tissue regeneration, myocardial infarction repair. But we're also leveraging it, as you mentioned, in the area of wound healing for surface wounds. We can also load other types of cells within these matrix. We've already demonstrated the ability to do that as a way to treat type 1 diabetes, where cells can sense glucose and secrete insulin. So we believe this shielding technology is a versatile approach to enable the use of allogeneic cells. We think of cells as the next, you know, biotech revolution is going to be driven by the use of cells as medicines. And they have remarkable power.
Now, let me go and just ask. So in the case of type 1 diabetes, you would give some beta cells, that is pancreatic cells, that, for example, were grown from one person or an animal even, maybe. And in that, you put them in the shielding, and they both sense your glucose level and put out insulin as if they were normal pancreatic beta cells. And I suppose the question is then, how long does this shielding, this biomaterial last? Is it totally inert? Is it eaten by other parts of the body or bacteria? How long can it last, and do you have to give it repeatedly?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way we think about it is that's actually a really nice property we can tune. We can engineer the durability. In some applications, such as the the myocardial infarction repair, it's actually not necessary for those cells to persist many, many years. So we've purposely engineered systems that could last months. But we also have formulations, like in the case of the type 1 diabetes, where that's a chronic illness, and you know the patient is going to require treatment for the duration of their life. There, our goal is to, you know, facilitate those materials, develop them in such a way that they can last as long as possible. So far, we've demonstrated the ability to have them last close to a year. We have some data in other studies that have pointed to that. We're really trying to push that needle. Ultimately, what it could be is that, you know, maybe they last for several years and the patients come in for replacement doses of our hydrogel cell constructs.
So we're talking with Omid Vaisek, V-E-I-S-E-H, Vaisek. I'm butchering the name and I apologize. But his lab is veisehlab.rice.edu, and you can find articles as well as more information. You can even donate probably to his lab to help this research along at that site. But this is, if you will, such a new idea. Now, we're told by the Japanese who are doing heart failure therapy with stem cells, that you have to put in 20 to 30 million of these stem cells, which are, they use iPSPs, induced pluripotent stem cells, that have their HLA-G markers removed, at least in the heart failure study they're doing. And many places in the U.S. are only putting in 500 to 700, and obviously they don't think that can work for stem cells, but maybe as an anti-inflammatory, they say, because of the growth factors that these cells secrete. How many stem cells are in one of these, I guess they're capsules, and how many capsules do you have to have for, and I don't know if you've moved to humans yet, but at least in animals, how many do you use?
So the current design is such that we have about 40,000 stem cells per hydrogel capsule. These capsules are 1.5 millimeters in diameter spheres. And, you know, we anticipate for a human patient, you know, we're going to need probably thousands of these capsules, depending on the indication, but also depending on the potency of the cells that we load into the capsules. So that's another facet that we're really trying to optimize. And we have some projects that are really geared at doing that. The more potent and the more viable the cells are, then the fewer capsules we'll need. So we have two axes of optimization that we're trying to tune to get the best, most efficient therapy.
I hope you will come back when you have more data and more research and have moved to, I assume you're in small animals now and are going to be moving to larger animals before humans. I hope you'll come back and talk to us more, because you are obviously on the forefront of this area of using mesenchymal stem cells in this way. We've been talking with Dr. Omid Vasech, V-E-I-S-E-H. Say it again for us.
Omid Vasa.
Omid Vasa. It's the Vasa Lab, V-E-S, V-E-I-S,
V-E-I,
I am terribly sorry, V-E-I-S-E-H, Lab, L-A-B, .rice.edu for more information. This has been 1022B. As usual, we are sponsored by Persona Nutrition. I use Persona for my personalized supplements. You can too. If you want to have some fun, take the free online assessment to get supplements personalized just for you. Go to mypersona.com, mypersona.com. They are the sponsor and allow us to bring you such incredible guests as Omid. And Omid, I can't thank you enough, one, for stimulating us, two, for telling us about this with enviable lucidity, and three, for advancing the science in this way. This is a potentially major area of breakthrough that you and your lab have done. Thank you. I congratulate you, and thank you for telling us about it. Caitlin.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Caitlin, thank you for great engineering. We'll be back next week with another A, the latest medical news of the week, most of which we're trying to make sure isn't COVID and what it means to you. And B, great guests that teach us about where science is going in medicine and the areas, the social health determinants of medicine, and how you and I can maximize our potentials by learning this. We, of course, are brought to you by Persona, so thanks very much to Persona, but thank you for downloading us. Tell your friends about us, rate us. We'll be back next week. Thanks again.